Let's give this award.
Okay.
All right, good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, cold January 16, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America's Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again and good morning. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one, opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or really anything else you'd like to address. Anybody wishing to do so, come on up. And seeing no one moving, yeah, Kurt, absolutely. Start by introducing yourself, Kurt.
Okay.
And welcome.
Thank you.
I get to see you when the weather's good and we play golf sometimes, but I don't ever get to see you when it's cold.
Thank you. You can see I'm dressed warmly for occasion and supporting Ames High. My daughter has a game tonight. So, Kurt Friedrich, Ames, Iowa, 106th Street. And I am just curious about the plan that we're coming up here with the comprehensive plan review. And interested in being a part of that process when that kicks off. So I'm curious about the schedule timing for that analysis.
Okay, super. Well, what we will absolutely do, while I don't think we can answer the schedule at this point, we'll make sure that you are kept informed, and I think I would speak to the whole board when I say we welcome as much input as we can possibly get, and thank you.
Yeah. And this is going to be about the housing assessment, you mean? Or?
In talking with Jerry Moore, he expressed that in the coming months that his team, along with the supervisors, would be embarking on a more comprehensive review of the comprehensive development plan for the county and update that accordingly. And I really like the trajectory of the county at this point, and I think we've been more progressive about development specifically, and I'd like to see that continue. And as a person involved in that industry, I'd like to volunteer to be a part of that process.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I have something else in my mind. Okay, thanks.
Very good. Anybody else wishing to address anything? All right, next is recognition of Story County 2017 Years of Service Award. So last week, we had our second annual employee recognition breakfast and handed out all these awards at that time. But for the record, let's get all this in. So these are employees that this year are celebrating a milestone, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and sometimes beyond with Story County. So celebrating 5 years with the county is Russell Bauer from the Sheriff's Office, Samuel Huey from Secondary Roads, Melissa Johannes from Conservation, Tyler Kelly from IRVM, Jessica Lansdell from Conservation, Brian Moore from Secondary Roads, Marilyn Mozinski from the Sheriff's Office, Nicole Sprecher from Community Services, Barb Steinbeck in IT, and Ryan Wiemold from Conservation. Celebrating 10 years, Benjamin Volkes from the Sheriff's Office, Joseph Bauer from Secondary Roads, Tracy Jeffrey from the Sheriff's Office, Lori McDonald from the Treasurer's Office, Jamie Schmidt from the Sheriff's Office, Zachary Skelton from the Sheriff's Office, Kyle Springer from Secondary Roads. At 15 years, we have Leanna Ellis from the Sheriff's Office, Michelle Good from the Sheriff's Office, Jamie Johnson from the Sheriff's Office, Laura Smith from Facilities Management. At 20 years, Sherry Dobson from the Assessor's Office, Stacy Herridge, our recorder, Aaron Kester from the Sheriff's Office, Stephanie Memmer from the Sheriff's Office, Robert O'Borney from Facilities Management, and Michael Wallbilling from the Sheriff's Office. And finally, at 25 years, Mark Brecky with Secondary Roads, Jonathan Brett Fry from Secondary Roads, and Lori Minson from Secondary Roads. So I don't believe we have any of those individuals with us here today. So when you see them, please congratulate them on their years of service here in Story County. Next item is consideration of minutes from last week.
Move minutes as presented.
I will second.
We've got a motion and a second. Anything to discuss about the minutes?
Just that I want to make clear that those are, as they are now presented, there was, I believe, a word change.
Sure.
In them.
Absolutely. Okay. Completely appropriate. Just we want our minutes to be an accurate reflection, and I think these absolutely do that. Anything further? No. Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions as listed, Board.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda, Board.
As presented. No changes here.
Second on that.
Motion and a second. Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing item, we do have one today. First consideration of Ordinance 268, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County for Resolution 1869. And it's Cameron Estates, third edition. Wow, we're up to three already. That's outstanding. Gary, how are you this morning?
Doing good. Good morning. Okay, again, this is two items. One is the rezoning request, and the second one is the subdivision plat. It's a minor final subdivision plat of Cameron Estates, third edition. Property owner is Kurt Co., LLC, Kurt Friedrich. The property is located about a mile northwest of the city of Ames. It's in Section 19 of Franklin Township. The north border of this property is 190th Street. It's north of Cameron School Road. It's also west of Hickory Hills subdivision, and they're proposing two development lots of this 9.75-acre property to take access off of the existing cobblestone court cul-de-sac road, which is a part of the second addition. Current zoning is A1 Agricultural District. They're requesting an AR, Agricultural Residential District. This is consistent with the first two phases of Cameron Estates 1 and 2. Minimum lot size is about an acre for single-family residential dwellings. The plat itself, again, it's 9.75 acres. They're proposing just two development lots. The initial submittal was for four. They're going with two development lots on the north end. The rest will be in outlots. Outlot G contains the creeks that go through the property, extend to the east. Outlot I consists of a stormwater detention basin that was constructed. Outlot H, the intent is for that to be sold to property owners. Mr. Friedrich is here, as you know from this morning, and his engineer, Scott Rennell, if you have some questions about the request. Lot sizes, about 1.2 acres. It's in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The primary category is Rural Service Agricultural Conservation. Subcategory is Rural Residential with some natural areas. This shows you the map. This is from 2017. Subject property is outlined in red. Again, you've got the city of Ames, so we're just over a mile to the north and west. Areas in transition, for the most part, there's platted lots to the south and west in Cameron Estates. Hickory Hills subdivision to the east has platted lots. There's also some larger lots with the single-family dwellings to the north and to the east. There's also some larger agricultural parcels. There's some drainage, creek, and vegetated areas as well to the north and to the east. Adjacent zoning is A1 agricultural to the north and east. To the north, we have a 35-acre parcel with a house built in 49. To the east, a dwelling that was built in 1968 on a 4.75-acre parcel. Hickory Hills is zoned R1 Transitional Residential District. That's a 25,000-square-foot minimum lot size. The property where it abuts up to Hickory Hills, though, those lots are range from 3/4 of an acre to an acre and a half. And again, Cameron Estates is to the south and to the west, and those lots range from an acre in size and greater. So here's the graphic. Shows you the outline of the property. Again, it's a 9.75-acre parcel. To the east is a 4.75-acre parcel. There's a dwelling there. To the north is a 35-acre parcel with a dwelling. Cameron Estates, second edition, about the north half. The south half was the first phase. Again, those lots are an acre or greater. And then the lots that abut the property range from 3/4 of an acre to an acre and a half. This is the zoning. Again, they're requesting AR, Agricultural Residential District. That's to the west and to the south. The yellow represents the R1 Transitional Residential District, and then everything else that you see is A1 Agricultural District. It's in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. The policy designation is rural residential. Requires a maximum one unit single-family dwelling per acre. Full infrastructure is not required. They encourage clustering of residential sites. There's a component for protecting environmental resources. There's a component for managing and mitigating stormwater runoff and soil erosion. This is the same designation that Hickory Hills to the east has. There's also a provision for rural residential designation in the plan that talks about the cities, City of Ames, City of Gilbert, are to waive their right to review subdivision plats in this designated area. And we've received word from the City of Gilbert that they have taken action to waive their right to review it. A little bit of history. This request was before the Planning and Zoning Commission back in February of 2017. They were proposing to rezone and to provide a plat for approval. Again, the initial subdivision plat had four lots. Two of those were to be off of Cobblestone Court, which is the cul-de-sac road. And then they were proposing two additional lots off of Harvest Road, which is the north-south road that extends through the subdivision. And those are going to be flag lots. Prior to the meeting, we received concerns from some of the adjacent property owners about what was being proposed, concerns that potentially the existing development was causing stormwater drainage issues, concerns about erosion within the creeks that extend through Hickory Hills. And based on that information, the applicant decided to pull the request and spent time looking through the comments that were provided from the property owners. They spent time talking to the property owners and meeting with them about their concerns. Also, the Hickory Hills Property Owners Association hired an engineer to study the topography in Cameron Estates and looked at the drainage. And based on stormwater, calculated storm events, came up with some recommendations that were provided in a memo that was put out by the Drainage and Environmental Review Committee of the Homeowners Association in April of 2017. And then December of 2017, the applicant's engineer did respond to that and communicated about much of the actions that they did take in response to the request that came from their engineer. So in reviewing a rezoning request, there's five things that we are to look at. The first one is the, you know, is it in conformance with the development plan, or in this case, it's the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. With the rural residential areas designation, it talks about development at a rural density where urban infrastructure may not be in place. Again, there's no sanitary sewer, but there is water, gas, and electric. It recognizes a market need for people who are interested in large rural lots in more of an agricultural type setting. Again, it talks about average net density of one unit per acre. Full infrastructure, again, standards are not required. There's a component on and focus on environmental resources and mitigating stormwater runoff and erosion control. Again, what is proposed will be in the north area of this 9.75 acres in the clearing area. The drawing shows the proposed septic fields in the clearing area. It's anticipated that the houses will be built in that clearing area. The second thing is the rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent. Again, the designation is Agricultural Residential District. Says it's designed to provide for single-family detached dwellings with limited activities interrelated with ag uses. Community facilities and open spaces should serve the residences. It's not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings that are incompatible with surrounding land uses. Again, we're only talking about two lots on the north end. Agricultural uses likely will not occur here. They have restrictive covenants where livestock will not be permitted. There's open spaces within the subdivision that's proposed, about 7 acres of outlot area. The proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses. Subject property was a part of the applicant's original plan to integrate this area into the phases 1 and 2. No accesses will be taken off of 190th to the north or Harvest Road, which again is the main north-south road going through the development. The tree and the creek areas will be undeveloped. And the outlots will help serve to filter and absorb stormwater and provide a buffer for the development and the surrounding properties. It's anticipated that dwellings will be compatible with the surrounding dwellings. The fourth thing that we're to look at is the natural resources, and when there are more than 50% natural resources on the site, there's a requirement that the action be to a less restrictive or a more restrictive district, or they do a conservation overlay, or that we have some conditions. Actually, there's 44% natural resources of the 9.75 acres, and when you look at this development in the context of the other two phases, there's about 12 acres of natural resources, open space area. Our ordinance requires for subdivisions that have more than 10 lots that they provide 15% of that development in open space area, and they're showing 16% open space overall. Last thing is, if it's in an A1, which is what it is, if it has a high LISA, land evaluation site assessment score, it should not be rezoned. The scores are actually lower than the 267. We're into the site photos. We took photos when we started the review back in February, actually in January, and then we took more recent photos in December. So this is actually the north side of the development. There was an existing house and detached garage, which has been removed. This is the clearing area. This is where the proposed two lots are. We're on the cul-de-sac area looking eastward. And that's that open area. In talking to the conservation staff, they think that this area is actually farmed, like the rest of the development was in row crops at one time. From February, looking west from the cul-de-sac, and then you can see a house is under construction. That's part of the second addition. Looking west toward Harvest Road from the south end of the property. And again, they did some work in response to the concerns from the adjacent neighbors with constructing a stormwater detention basin. So that's some of the activity that you'll see. This is looking north from Outlot H. And this is the basin that was constructed, looking eastward. And this is the outlet end of that basin. You can see the
riprap that they installed along the front side of that creek that extends through the hills. History, the preliminary plat was approved by the board February 11, 2014. The final plat for the first edition was approved July 1, 2014. Second edition was approved January 3, 2017. This is what the preliminary plat concept looked like. You can see how it fits in with the third edition. Again, it squares off the development. This is part of the information that was submitted. We're in the northeast corner.
It's kind of a zoom in. The purple line represents the natural resources layer, and it really yields itself to, it's not real accurate, as I said, where they're proposing to build the dwellings and put the septic systems, there's a clearing area there which does not show up with this boundary, and so it really yields itself to, you know, getting a on-site analysis of what's actually going on there. Subdivision plat, again, the lots are on the north end, lots 48 and 49. They are going to share access off the east end of the cul-de-sac bulb. It is meeting county requirements. And then the rest will be in outlots, G, H, and I. Natural resources from the ordinance, 88.05, talks about protection of natural vegetative cover. Also does allow up to 15% of the natural vegetative cover to be removed for earth grading, roadway construction, site clearing, other construction activity, but they will not be impacting this development to that scale. They could remove up to 1.46 acres and be within our ordinance requirements, but they will not be doing that. The other thing is the open space, which I covered. Developments with 10 or more lots are required to have 15% open space, and they're showing 16%. Again, impact to vegetation is to be very minimal. We did receive information from the applicant's engineer that the proposed subdivision will meet or exceed, actually, the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and the SUDAS requirements. It's also going to be under a statewide NPDES stormwater drainage permit. Changes from the initial submittal to now, again, it was four. Now they're proposing two residential lots. There's more open space area that's being shown on the plat. East of the proposed two north lots, north of the Center Creek. And then, again, previously they were going to do flag lots on that south end. They're not doing that anymore. Adding the area to the southeast, which is now the detention basin, Outlot I. Again, mentioned plans to sell Outlot H, which is in the southwest portion of the property. They also installed stormwater drainage tiling on the north end of the Cobblestone Court Road. Services and utilities, Midland Power for electric, Alliant Energy Gas, CenturyLink Phone, Xena Rural Water. Mary Greeley provides ambulance service and Gilbert Fire service. Going way back, this started back in December 15, 2016. We had initial conceptual review. Had a sit-down after that in January of 2017. That was before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. This submittal was made November 30th. Review comments went out the 15th and the 22nd of 2017. We sent notification letters within a quarter mile on the 21st of December of 2017 and January 5 prior to the board meeting 2018. We also prepared publications for the three newspapers. We received one comment before the Planning and Zoning Commission from an adjacent landowner to the east about whether or not there's an easement for a road. I did respond to him and provided that information to the applicant and communicated to him that the eastern portion that is abutting this property to the east will be an outlot. There was a concern about this person plants hostas flowers and wanted to make sure that they wouldn't be impacted. A copy of the subdivision plat was mailed to the cities of Gilbert and Ames. Gilbert did waive their right to review January 8, 2018. Did not receive a response from the city of Ames. A copy of the subdivision plat was mailed to the Gilbert Fire Chief and Mary Greeley Ambulance Service. We received support from the Fire Chief. The Ambulance Service did provide some information that we provided to the applicant about self-help programs, CPR, other various types of training for people in this area. Again, we communicated that to the applicant. Points to consider in reviewing the rezoning request. AR Agricultural District is consistent with the first two phases, as I mentioned. It would shore up that edge of the development in the county. The lot sizes are comparable to Cameron Estates Phase 1 and Phase 2, also consistent with Hickory Hills to the east. Again, reduction of lot numbers from 4 to 2. We talked about open space. They've taken action to address stormwater drainage concerns. The applicant could make a case for requesting an R1 district designation. However, he would like to continue with what he started with, doing these rural larger lots and then try to preserve as much open space as possible in natural area. Minor subdivision plat, Poinsett Center. Again, this was a part of his plan to include this in the phases one and two. It is a logical extension of the first two phases. Again, no accesses will occur off of 190th to the north or Harvest Road. All lots area has increased from the initial submittal from last year. Again, it's anticipated that the houses and the septic systems will be built in the clearing area. Lot sizes will be comparable to Cameron Estates 2 and 1, similar to Hickory Hills to the east. Outlots will preserve the existing creek and treat areas, help with the filtering of stormwater drainage, provide a buffer. And then we already talked about the detention basin. Status before the Planning and Zoning Commission, January 3, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of the rezoning request and approval of the plat with the condition that they meet the review comments from staff from December 22. They did make the changes to the driveway access easement. The applicant's engineer stated that they will provide a note with regard to addressing the streams, the preservation requirement there. We had some discussion about showing the actual boundary on the drawing. Again, the applicant's engineer is here to discuss that. So really, we got two things before us. One is the rezoning. Again, the January 3 Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend unanimously 7-0 to approve the rezoning request. So that brings us to alternative one. The Story County Board of Supervisors recommends approval of the zoning amendment as submitted and requested by the applicants as put forth in case 3-17, it's ordinance 268, and setting the second consideration for January 23 of 2018. The second thing is the plat. A separate action there. We set it up to consistent with the Planning and Zoning Commission recommendation to approve it with the condition that the items from the review comments be addressed, which takes you to item two. Story County Board of Supervisors recommends approval of the minor subdivision final plat, Cameron Estates third edition, with the above stated condition as put forth in case 1-17 and its resolution 18-69.
All right, so I would suggest that if everybody's seeing it like I am, that we're not asking for conditions on the rezoning, but you are asking for conditions on the plat.
We're very, 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 very close.
Sure, but let's deal with the rezoning first, and then we'll talk some more about the plat. My only question is, we're not recommending approval, we're approving, right? So I'm reading the
approval, correct.
Yeah, so the word recommends doesn't fit there for board supervisors. You're talking about us approving this, and Morris and Marty, what I'm suggesting is, unless you've got issues with the rezoning, let's go ahead and get that part done, and then we'll have the rest of this conversation.
I would move approval of the zoning amendment as submitted and requested by the applicant.
Public hearing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to deal with just the rezoning first, and then we'll come back and do another public hearing for the second part of this. But let's get through the rezoning first. So we're opening the public hearing right now on the rezoning request only. Anybody wishing to speak to it, come on up. Seeing no one, I'm closing the public hearing on the zoning request. Now go, Lars.
I move approval of the zoning amendment as submitted and requested by the applicant as put forth in case RUV 03-17. And this is ordinance 268, setting second consideration for January 23rd, 2018.
Second that. Any discussion? Super. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Rezoning passes first reading. It'll come back to us next week for second reading. All right, now we're dealing with Resolution 1869, which you're suggesting we would have. So talk us through where you still see us as differing from the applicant.
Yeah, I think on the ordinance we have a requirement to identify streams that extend through the development. And normally what we see is the marking of the easement. The language states that from the center of creek outward 30 feet, it should be identified. The whole idea is to protect it from encroachment of future development. Part of the information that was provided is that it's in an outlot, which it is. But over time, and the outlot is to be owned by the homeowners association.
Right.
But over time, it's possible that, you know, ownership may change. It's not uncommon for property owners to acquire part of outlot areas for purposes of developing or doing different things with. So we just want to make sure that it's crystal clear that the easement area with, you know, within the 30 feet be protected from future encroachment. And so the applicant's engineer stated that he'll place a note on the final plat that area be, that the creeks be preserved, in lieu of actually showing the delineation of the 30 feet, which is...
Right, but our goal is preserve within 30 feet of those streams.
Right.
Does what they're suggesting accomplish that?
Partially, yes. And I have not seen this information on the plat, so I mean, this is something that we can review and respond back to at the next meeting.
Okay. Scott, would you like to address it? Do you want to take these as we go, or do you want to take it in one fell swoop? Okay. All right, so that's one.
I have a question here. So when the applicant's indicating to you that a note that someone will type right on the actual map, the official document, type that there's an easement, but we would like the lines drawn. Is that the essence of what we've got here?
That's typically what you see with an easement. It's actually shown on the drawing, like the access easement was shown.
Yeah.
There was some concerns initially about the fact that the boundaries may change over time. I had a discussion with Mike Cox, our conservation director, and he referred to these creeks as gullies and didn't think over the long term that we would see much lateral changes. So it's likely that they'll stay within the boundaries as they're shown on the drawing, if things work out that way.
Have we required the lines to be on other people's similar maps?
Yes, that's typically how it's shown. However, and I told Scott this morning, it's not specifically stated that it be drawn on there. It's more generally stated that they provide this easement information, but usually it's shown.
Which from a legal perspective, an easement is words, right? An easement's not a map. So at the end of the day, if we have a map and then we have words, the words are what we're going to go to.
Well, and he's providing words or a note on the plat. I don't know that they're actually working on a separate document that will also be recorded. And the idea is that when you look at the plat, you know, sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words. It gets your attention, and that's really what this is all about. Let people know that there's a protection requirement there, that we don't get encroachment.
Without them going to the abstract. Because the easement also has to be in words on the abstract, correct? So this is the words get blurred, it's too small. Some of us need
All right, so that's one difference that you think we have. That's the only difference you think we have right now.
That's it.
Okay. Anything further from you?
Nothing.
Scott, you come on up. You'll go before public hearing, and then we'll see if anybody else wants to weigh in. Start by introducing yourself, please.
Scott Renewal, Fox Engineering. Really, I don't even think the easement's required. Kind of the definition of a stream versus a gully or an intermittent stream, so I don't even think the stream's required. And also the way that these easements would work, honestly, at the end of the day, the county has nothing. Because it says 30 foot each side of the stream, but there's no way to access it. So the only way to access the stream is from another property coming up the stream valley. So therefore, what he's asking for doesn't get you anything, doesn't provide anything. So what we proposed instead, and not only that, is I don't really think any of these are moving or going anywhere. We made efforts to control erosion and cut down the flows that they're not going anywhere anyway. So what I proposed is very simply, Outlot G is bisected by two intermittent streams. Story County is allowed, and this is the easement to Story County, to nobody else, by the way, which seems odd to me, but that's neither here nor there. Story County is allowed to enter Outlot G from public right-of-way to maintain the streams for the purpose of widening, improving, or protecting the streams, if necessary, for a width of 30 feet on each side of the stream of the center line of each stream. That is directly from the code section. So that's what we're proposing to do rather than show lines. You're assuming that when you show a line that there's some definitive part of that. And there is, but if the streams move, then it's not right. If somebody relocates the stream, it's not right. If somebody does some maintenance on the stream, it's not right. So there's lots of reasons just to leave it generic. This easement is to Story County, which is, again, odd. I don't know why Story County would have anything to do with this on private property or having need to. What Jerry said about the other stuff with Outlot G is immaterial, because Outlot G is part of the open green space. It's part of the 15%, and it doesn't say on here Outlot G is part of the 15% open space and you can never develop it. It doesn't say that. That's part of the whole process. So there's no way to redevelop this. There's no reason to resell it or redo anything with it. Iowa drainage law covers all of this in absence of anything being written. So not only that is if we were to do anything, and Story County wasn't even part of this, we still have Corps of Engineers and Iowa Department of Natural Resources, assuming that it was a stream. And again, I maintain it's not a stream, it's just an intermittent stream or a gully.
Yeah, and so, but Scott, I'll say this. I think there's value with where Story County has moved in the last few years, both in our role as Drainage District Trustees, which this doesn't fit into that, but in our role there, there's value to us long-term in having access and having a defined access. And the way we handle it, as you know, with Drainage District is, it's not based on lines on a map. It's based on top of bank. And wherever the top of that bank is how everything is based, and that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And all I'm looking for is the answer that provides reasonable access. So this is part of the Squaw Creek watershed, right? Mm-hmm. And what it is today is different than what that's going to mean 20, 25 years from now. And we've got to be looking, I believe, 25 years from now. And that's why I think the access here is important. I don't know if it's lines on a map or words or what.
Well,
it is,
what I'm saying is we're giving you more access to the actual stream than you have now. If we give you the 30 feet, then we can deny the Homeowners Association, not us,
right,
but the Homeowners Association can deny access to go through Outlot G to get to the stream easement. It's really that simple. Because the easement is not written, the county's requirements are written in a way that doesn't really require that. It assumes that you're going to work up and down the channel, I assume.
Right.
Sort of like a drainage district would. So what I think we've given is in the spirit of the ordinance and is actually better because, again, when we did the Outlot G, we knew where the streams were. We were trying to preserve those, keep the development away from the streams. And you know, in most cases, we're, you know, double that, if not more.
So. Okay. Questions for Scott before we open the public hearing?
I would agree. It's a gully. Locked it. And I think the concern that I have is when you look at a rolling series of pictures that some of the homeowners provided was that it has become an increasing issue in their lives and on their properties. To that end, I have discomfort. I am glad to see that you went to the trouble, the engineering and the expense, and I don't think it was a small thing, to do the detention pond, to do the riprap. It just, this thing was taking on a life of its own and encroaching on people's property. So I'm sitting here trying to weigh the difference between what we're doing here with what you have provided and a line, and I'm trying to get down to the point where you say this line is irrelevant because I'll give you language. So I'm sitting here, I'm still taking this all in.
Yeah, we're two separate issues. The Hickory Hills issues are kind of their own, and this is just really the maintenance of our own channels. And the two channels in question here, again, are fairly stable channels as they sit. They're not eroding. They're not doing things. The one that was causing some issues was kind of at the headwaters of another channel. That's where we built a detention facility, and that's taking care of that issue.
Good. What is the practical downside to the Homeowners Association to go ahead and have these lines drawn. Practical or legal, I mean, what, from a reality standpoint, is the Homeowners Association giving up or feel that they're at risk of with the line?
Actually, they're not giving up or doing anything. It doesn't make any difference to them. It actually makes a difference to you guys. If you actually want to maintain and go do the easement, then what I've given you is better than what you're asking for. And the Homeowners Association is likely to come to you, given the language is in here, that they'll come to you and say, hey, you guys have the easement. You have to maintain this easement, and you fix it. And so you're going to have this disagreement about who's going to fix what.
So, Scott, from your experience, because you have much experience with development in Story County, have you ever run across a similar situation here, and how have you dealt with it in the past?
That's a really good question. You know, I guess what I'm saying is I do drainage lawsuits all the time as an expert witness. Mm-hmm. I do about 2 a year. I turn down about another 8. And generally, the issues are have to do with things getting out of control. And maintenance, and so what I've given you here, again, I believe is in excess of what's required. And we talk about the 30 feet, so there's a 30 feet in there that meets the code requirements. And we give you a way to get to the stream without having to go to extraordinary lengths.
Right.
To me, the problem is here is the definition of responsibilities. When you ask for the easement, it implies to the Homeowners Association, hey, county's going to take care of this. They shouldn't be under any illusion that that's going to be the case. And that's really why I didn't want to put it on in the first place, because I didn't think the Homeowners Association should come, because you're creating a gray area by adding these easements, where the Homeowners Association is going to come to you and say, hey, you guys have the easement here. You need to maintain your easement. There's other language in other places, not necessarily on the plat, but part of the covenants, where the outlots are maintained by the Homeowners Association. That's really what I want to have happen here. The other part of this that gets flavored in it is this natural resources boundary, which is truthfully an odd thing in my mind, because it's trees. Well, the reality is the trees are causing most of our issues here, because they shade the area, the banks aren't stabilized, grass is really what holds things in place. So if you wanted to do this right, we should probably remove most of the trees and plant it to grass, you know. But again, there's a lot of stuff that comes out of this that I don't particularly like. I don't think it's particularly necessary. I don't understand what the need is for. But again, from my standpoint, if you're sitting here protecting the citizens of the county, then you probably should say, I don't want the easement. Let the Homeowners Association do it, because I believe Iowa law governs everything else, what has to happen.
Can I go back to Jerry? Jerry, I assume at some point there was a discussion with legal. Am I right in that assumption or not?
On this issue?
Yes.
No, there was not.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay.
It's in our ordinance, right. The requirement that they be...
The 30 feet is in our ordinance. It's not in our ordinance. It's got to be designated on that.
I would say that it's not crystal clear.
Right.
Grayer. On a drawing. I think it's gray. The intent is there. It's in the general provisions where it's talking about zoning permits, conditional use permits that are submitted, subdivision plats, that this be addressed. So, and usually it's shown on the drawing so that when somebody's buying property, looking at real estate, they can see that, oh, there's an access easement there. Oh, there's something to protect the stream and deal with the encroachment of buildings and that kind of thing.
Well, and so just one other thing, Morris, and then right back to you. So the other thing I heard you say, and just help me with this because it's lines on a map, but the pink purplish line, which is the natural resource area, I thought I heard you just say that's a line on the map,
right.
That's not all that accurate. You need to get in and probably take a look at that, which just causes me concern with this concept of lines on map.
Yeah, it's from the Ames River fringe layer, and it causes you to do an on-site analysis, and from that you depict that, you know,
It's not accurate. There are no trees on the east side of that edge on the north end there.
So, yeah, going back, Scott, you were saying you're really helping Story County residents out. All the feedback is good. We were just saying. What if the solution here to help move this forward would be that you draw the lines on the map so that we are able to go ahead and approve this as recommended by our staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then there be discussion afterwards with Jerry's department, possibly our legal department being involved, at looking at this particular requirement going forward. Because we've had, and I'm just asking, and Jerry, for you, the same. We've got a situation here where it seems like there's a line drawn in the sand, and I'm sorry, that was a bad kind of analogy. All right. We'll probably ask this, Bill. But I don't want to just override staff and override an existing ordinance and override the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation on something that has been a somewhat long-standing practice that has been in existence while other development has occurred.
Well, so, of course, you and I agree with a lot of what you just said, but you and I are hearing differently whether this is a long-standing practice or this is a... sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Usually it's shown. They're shown on the drawing.
But not always. It's not something that Story County has required all the way through, and this is based on...
All I'm saying is the ordinance doesn't specifically state that it be shown, but
correct.
In practice it's shown. It is shown in practice, and I think Scott will tell you the things that he works on. I don't want to speak for him, but normally they're shown on the drawing. Easements are shown on the drawing.
Actually, that's probably not the case. Like, even in drainage districts, it's always based on, we specify an easement, and we've done this before, we specify an easement, but it's based on where the actual facility is located. And because we don't always know, and it's not always accurate. This piece of ordinance is not all that old, by the way, I don't believe. I think it's 2013 is when it was written. And, you know, If the board wants the lines on there, go ahead and put it in your motion. I'll add the lines. Do I like it? No. Do I think it's the right thing to do? No. Do I think this ordinance has some problems? Yes. But if you want the lines, add the lines. We'll put them on there. I'm taking off my note. I'm going to give you exactly what you asked for.
You work for Kirk Friedrich, right? I mean,
you're
paying you for your services. Okay. Kurt, did you want to weigh in about your preferences about, do you want us to hold this up? I mean, if that's one option you do is, you know, hold it up.
I think I can speak for Kurt on that. He doesn't want to hold it up. He wants this approved. In fact, he'd like you to waive the second and third readings on the ordinance for rezones and so forth. So.
Okay. I see a nod out of that at least. All right. So, but, okay. Because I really, like I said, I'm very hesitant. To even though you say not this old, 4.5 years, and thank you for the clarification, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. I'm just hesitant that something's been around 4.5 years, and this is the first that we've heard that there may be a problem of it, and I'm not hearing the true downside to the property owners or the homeowners association if we do ask for the line.
The downside is you guys.
Yeah.
You don't really have access that you think you have. Because you can't get there. And not only that, as a homeowners association, because of the way it's written, is going to assume that you should be the ones that fix it.
Can't we get to it from the right of way?
No.
The way this is drawn, we're all lot
on the one,
C,
on the other one, you
dedicated
can.
To the county, so we can get there from the lot C.
Again, this isn't my only ordinance problem, by the way. We've had others that we've kind of worked through here, and we've got some others that are coming. So, I'm a precise guy. Whatever it says it should be, it should be. I don't normally argue this much about it. I usually just do a workaround and go on with life. But I found that these things kind of get legs of their own, and the unintended consequences, which is, in this case, the homeowners association says, you guys have the easement, why aren't you out here fixing it, applies. And I always look at what the unintended consequences of these easements are, and we don't. And that's the way I looked at this. And not only that Marty walked the stream. I don't know if the rest of you guys had a chance, but they aren't real straight. This 30-foot is a rather arbitrary number, all things
considered. No, that's a swag at best. Nature is doing what nature does.
Yep.
It was inartful to say cut down the trees, but frankly, you come out into the rural side of things, and if you want bank stabilization, you want grass.
Right. All right, so I'm going to make a suggestion, just to move us on. So we've already passed the rezoning with second reading coming next week. We can very easily, if this board so chooses, next week waive third and final reading and make next week final. But we've already passed the one that has second reading. So my suggestion is we're hearing a whole lot about what the ordinance says and what the perceived intent is. I'll just remind the two of you, we're the body that gets to set ordinances, and we get to determine what the intent is. It's the intent based on what the three of us collectively say it is. So I'm going to suggest, since we're already doing a second reading next week and hopefully getting to the end of the zoning, that we refer this to legal and have a full conversation, and we come back and we make the determination, because for me, at the end of the day, if we're going to require these drawn on a map, great, let's require it every single time in every circumstance that it's drawn on a map. And if we want the verbiage, then great, let's do the verbiage and let's move on and let's get all of this resolved going into next week. That would be my suggestion, if you guys are okay with that.
So Jerry, when Scott says a line with the easement puts the gully maintenance, because it is a gully, onto the county, you might have seen this, right? Scott, you just spoke to it.
Yeah, if you read the full part of it is, and the other overlapping provisions is, the homeowners association is supposed to maintain the area. I'm not certain why the county wants to have any responsibility for this area. That's not necessarily, as Rick said, there's maybe some future reason to have it, but I think it's pretty slim. I could even have argued that, you know, that this is an intermittent stream and doesn't meet the definition of the stream,
sure. And
we wouldn't have to do anything. My view from the very beginning was we put the outlot around these to preserve them and keep everybody away from them. The outlot, frankly, serves the purpose that you're requesting. All I did with the note is clarify and put the 30 feet in that took care of that.
Well, and all that does, I mean, just so we're clear, all that does, and the reason that I'm most interested in that component is none of us can absolutely foresee what water quality and water issues are going to look like 25 years down the road, and this just would give the county the authority to be able to get in there and do some things if the county ever chose to. I'm with you. I don't want there to ever be a perception that it's the county's responsibility to maintain this thing, but I do think it's important, as a founding member of the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority, that we have the ability to get into some of those side channels and do some things that might come along down the road. And for me, Scott, that's the whole intent here. And trying to get there in as unburdensome, consistent way as possible is all I want.
Well, then I would suggest that we'll add the lines on the plat. We will not do a legal description for the boundary. You all right with that?
I'm good with that.
And then we'll be done.
Okay. You'd rather do that than have us dig into this and get it done next week?
Well, I think you need to dig in some ordinance issues overall. So this is only just one of probably a dozen things that I have on my list now. So.
Okay. I've seen part of that list.
Yeah, I've sent you part of your list.
All right.
That we have.
We've got to open a public hearing,
okay.
And then we'll get to the instance. I'm hearing the applicants requesting that we go ahead and take action today on this one. We'll come back and do the second reading of the rezoning next week. So we'll open the public hearing, see if there's anyone who would like to address Resolution 1869.
I, Kurt Friedrich, Friedrich Land Development, 106th Street. I want to thank the supervisors for their attention to this final addition to Cameron, And thank you for your partnership in the entire subdivision. It's been a good experience, and we're very proud of the community that we've been able to create here. Lots of happy homeowners. So this final plat has taken a slightly different path than what we had originally anticipated. As Jerry noted, we had planned on four lots, and in view of addressing some of the concerns of our neighbors within and outside of Cameron, we've come back now with this new-looking final plat, plat 3, with just two lots, which does conform with the existing lots within Cameron Estates, and I think just finishes the subdivision in a nice way. So I guess I would just make myself available to any questions, but thank you for your partnership, and we look forward to the next project.
Sure. So I have one question, but first I want to say this. Kurt, the way you and your staff have handled this, being neighborly and going the extra mile to try to make sure that not only residents within Cameron, but residents in Hickory Hills and beyond were heard and considered. I don't think it's any big secret that Friedrich and Company and now Kurtco is in the business of trying to generate profits, and clearly four lots would have more of a profit value than two, and so it should be completely recognized that the decision was made to take a financial hit in order to do something that went above and beyond in conforming to the highest and best use, and I think you should absolutely be publicly commended for that, and so I'm doing that. My question is on the shared driveway. So we had questions about a shared driveway over on 505th, and I don't want us to get into that same situation here, and maybe this is for both you guys. Talk me through the shared driveway, and is that something we're going to have to deal with again down the road?
And are we speaking of the shared drive that we have here at the east end of Cobblestone Court?
At the east end of Cobblestone Court, which, as I understand it, will be the access point to both of these lots.
That's correct. I think that it's been resolved. We've reduced the length of that shared drive back to what Jerry had recommended. Essentially, it's a 20-foot wide. At the point where it is adjacent to the backside of the cul-de-sac, and then 50 feet in depth. And if it's necessary subsequently for the homeowners that would build there, we could add a subsequent easement to get that drive further back into the lot. But that is not being requested at this point.
Okay, and you don't see it being a challenge for marketability having a shared access here? Because I think it was an issue over on 505th.
Correct. No, I don't see it being an issue here. It was more of a matter of practicality that we wanted to address it now, because we're anticipating that the future homeowners would likely want to see that extended.
Okay. Good. We feel good about it. Okay. Questions for
Kirk? None. I think that this has been a slow walk into being. We're virtually a year later, and appreciate the time and the expense and the troubles you went to get to it. Two is better than four. I understand, as Rick just made mention, it is not as financial rewarding, but you made peace with the Hickory Hills Homeowners Association. You did above and beyond what I would like to see you do. You did. And I guess I would turn to Jerry. Is there anything that you just heard that you would speak to?
We're good, I think.
Yep.
I think you have to think long term, and relationships are the most important.
I think you did it here.
I guess I am going to follow this one and have to think long term. Going back when you started Cameron States, and the original plat was approved, meeting the standards, you did not anticipate any of the problems that happened. Ended up happening over here, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I just wanted to make that as a point about why it's important to leave options on the table, because you never know what's going to happen. Thanks.
Good.
Thank you.
Still in public hearing. Linda.
Good morning. Linda Merkin, 17185 GW Carver Avenue, Gilbert, which is in Franklin Township. I also do serve on the County's Planning and Zoning Commission. I would like to speak in favor of the easement. As Supervisor Sanders has said, this is in the Squaw Creek watershed. This land is, in fact, very close to Squaw Creek. And a gully or an intermittent stream or whatever, I don't know what the legal term is, but I know where the water goes from there. And I think that the county would have some interest. The Watershed Association Authority will probably have some interest in this because where that water goes is Squaw Creek. And I am in favor of the county having the easement because of that reason. So thank you very much for considering it.
Super. Thanks, Linda. Yeah, I didn't hear anybody here try to talk us out of the easement. It's simply the mechanism we were going to use to have the easement. And I think now we've agreed that it's going to be lines on a map, which we'll see how that works out. Anybody else wishing to address us on this? Then I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action. And we're on resolution 1869. Get us back to our options. Is option number two that we've discussed, which is approval with conditions. And actually, condition.
I move approval of resolution 1869, minor subdivision final plat, with the condition as put forth in and set. There is no second consideration here, correct? I'm just reading off of.
Which is fine.
Yep. Right, that's fine.
Yep. Yeah. We're just doing this. Okay, so we've got a motion. And the consideration, just to be clear, is that the lines will be shown on the map.
And we just have a second consideration for next Tuesday.
No second consideration on this one. This one, once we pass it, is passed. Yeah, we set the second consideration for the rezoning for next Tuesday.
That comes back.
Yep.
All right, then I would approve the motion as stated.
All right, so we've got a motion and a second for resolution 1869, which finalizes this minor plat with the condition that the lines be shown on the map 30 feet on either side of where the stream exists today, as close as we can have that drawn on a map. Any further conversation?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1869 passes. So the only thing we're waiting on, Kurt, is we'll handle zoning next week, and the board may choose to waive third and final reading of that.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Scott, I would appreciate it if you would send me your list. It sounds like you sent it to Supervisor Sanders. I don't know if
I indicated I had a list. I wanted to process it.
Want to process it?
Send the list.
Oh.
The list is pretty long.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. I got it. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. And then my other thing would be in bringing up if in this particular requirement, if there does seem to be some other way for us to protect ourselves better or to word it better in the future, I still like the idea of a referral over to legal, maybe not with the same urgency of coming back next week. But, Jerry, what do you think about that, referring that back over, referring it to legal?
Sorry, I missed part of what you said.
Sure.
So is this part of the motion then that I...
No, we're all done. Okay. I'm just saying from a staffing to staff, and asking my fellow supervisors, what do you think about still asking legal to take a look at Scott's stated concerns about rewording this particular section of our ordinance to protect it, possibly protect us better?
We'd be happy to do that. We did defer to legal on the interpretation that we had on the access easement that ended up being shown on the final plat, and they supported our interpretation, but I'd be happy to talk to legal about the easement language as well.
Good.
That good?
For the stream.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. All right, we're to additional items. Discussion and consideration of work program for county outreach and special projects manager.
Hi.
Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. I'm a couple weeks behind where I'd like to be on this, but starting out 2018, as I do every year, I have the draft work program that kind of guides me and now Chrissy as an intern for working with me while we go forward for the next calendar year. Put on the board's agenda. I'm just going to highlight a few things and then open up questions. I'll go section by section. Capital improvements plan should look exactly how it has in the past, other than I added the step that we put the draft CIP schedule and review process before the board. Going to communications plan, the items that are listed as tasks are those included in the adopted communications plan. For quadrant meetings, I left it TBD for the dates so that you could give me some guidance on when you'd like to hold those. I originally had put in like a February, March, August, September date, but for now, for the board's discussion, it's TBD. Going down further to mission statement development, ironically, last week as I was finalizing this, there came a call from the American Planning Association for CPAT applications. And CPAT is Community Planning Assistance Team. I had an opportunity to speak with Ryan from the APA to discuss the applicability of Story County applying for CPAT to help with mission statement development. He thought it'd be worthwhile for us to submit an application. So I added that as part of the work program item, again, for discussion by the board.
Yeah, so let's do that discussion right now. So CPAT board, and Loris, I think you know this. Marty, I'm not sure how involved you were at this point, but that was really the kickoff when Paul and Wayne and I came together and we started talking about this concept of a comprehensive plan and starting to get more organized in the way we go forward. There was an opportunity that actually Leanne, at that time in her role as Director of Planning and Development, brought forward to us. There was this opportunity from the Planners Association to bring in a team to take a look at everything we do and how we do it. And that was really, would that have been 2011 or 2012?
I think we started the discussion in 2011.
Yeah, and that was really the jumping off point to so many. I mean, you look around this room, some things, it was jumping off point to so many things we've done. And so I think it's a phenomenal idea to reach out to CPAT because I think it could be a win-win. I think it could be an incredible win for us to have them come in and take a look. Here we are 6 years later, take a look at how things have gone and how much of that is traceable back to their original work. But I also think it could be a great win for them because, as I understand it, they haven't done a second round of these yet. We were kind of on the front end of CPAT, them going out and providing this service. And this may be a great chance for them to be able to demonstrate what kind of progress can be made based on the work they've done.
Yeah, we would be kind of like the first, one of the first return clients. And the project team lead, Wayne, apologize, I cannot recall his last name, would likely be involved too. Just quickly, so I'm a certified professional planner, American Institute of Certified Planners. As part of our code of ethics to which we abide, we are strongly encouraged to take on pro bono planning work. And the American Planning Association is our nationwide organization. They developed CPAT years ago as an opportunity for planners to be able to give back to communities. And so you have very highly qualified planners that sign up to perform CPAT. Sounds like a surgery or something. to take part in CPAT, and they really pick and choose. And in talking to Ryan, he wants to get Wayne back on the phone call. But there's a small application I do need to go through. And we do need to pay for their travel expenses back and forth. We don't pay for professional consulting fees.
Right.
And that's where kind of the hook is.
I do remember this. I covered them all. And it was an enlightening experience and how much work was done in really a relatively short period of time to lay the foundation for that what ended into moving into conversations about strategic plan and moving forward with everything. So I support this.
Well, so it's worth a read, and I'm sure it's still on our website somewhere. Leanne, I haven't read it in a while. But it's the final report from CPAT is worth, if you want a snapshot of where we were, I think you'll be flabbergasted at where Story County was at that point in so many different ways. and you'll be able to trace directly how we went from there to the Government Restructuring Committee to the C2C plan. I mean, just right on through, that's really the starting point, and it seems to me that it's a really nice way to consider kind of closing that circle.
I don't know. I got to admit, I beg ignorance here because the government structure was sucking the oxygen out of my life at that point. And the CPAT, that's just an acronym that you guys just explained to me.
Yep. So I'm hearing, yes, let's put it on your work program.
I'm going to keep it tied to the mission statement development, too. That's just proposed. Mm-hmm. If you're okay. Do you want to go back to the quadrant meetings and talk about that real quick?
Do we like two per year? So for 2 years now, we've tried having two per year. We've tried having one basically before our farmers start planting and one after they're out of the fields. To me, if we're going to do two, that's when the two make sense. I don't know that I noticed a huge uptick in participation. Basically, we have the same people to participate every year. They participate whether we have it in the morning or in the evening. And we have certain quadrants that participate pretty regularly and certain quadrants that don't participate at all. And I don't see it changing a whole lot through the, have we been doing this 4 or 5 years now?
I think this will be our 5th year.
Okay. So up to you guys on the board, what you want to do with this.
I know this year, the way the harvest season went, I put them later and they were still in the fields. And so it's in game, really, to pick those dates.
One thought that came to me, because of the weather and always being subject to the weather a little bit, but also the fact that maybe some people were not available to come on their quadrant evening, okay, is perhaps we work with IT to see if Facebook Live or Twitter Live, you know, could broadcast live, okay, is that we broadcast from at least one of the locations to offer an alternate for somebody who may be sitting down in, say, the Southwest quadrant who can't really make when we normally go to usually Huxley, right, and instead but is available for Zeri. As an option. It's just something to throw out to start to think about there, or maybe pick two quadrants in the spring and do that with kind of that option, and then two other quadrants for the fall and do with that option. That also would allow them at least to be, we could record them, you know, also still using the same basic technology of actually a cell phone, if you will, and see if that allows either some participation remotely or at least people who are not attending can watch another quadrant ask the same question. Since we're bringing staff along, staff is giving an update, a brief update. So it's another possibility.
Mm-hmm. And we've been keeping attendance numbers, Leanne.
I pass around a sign-in sheet to all the sessions. I do have those. But as Rick said, it is similar faces at each go-around that we've seen in the past years.
So my suggestion, taking more of what you suggest, my suggestion would be we go to once per year in each quadrant, but we do as many of them as feasible. We have a social media component, be it Facebook Live or whatever it might be, and we try to focus in on that. The other advantage there is it reduces the amount of time that our staff is spending on these. Again, so the concept between having them twice a year, once during the day, once in the evening, was that we could hit more people. I'm seeing no impact at all that we're hitting more people. We're hitting who we're hitting. And so I would suggest that we go to once per year. In my mind, it would be a fall kind of option. And we do as much as we can with Facebook Live or whatever technology offers to us.
Is there a preference for morning or evening?
I think it needs to be evening.
Yeah, I agree.
Thoughts, Marty?
Nothing. I just, frankly, we've had quadrants that we were the only people in attendance. And it's
2 years in a row in one of them.
And we, the expectation is that as a supervisor, you give your time. But when you take staff to these things and they are a virtual bust, we're taking them away from what they are to do on behalf of the rest of the county. And I'm sitting at coming at it from the direction, it's just like, okay, let's shrink our footprint here, try to get as much as we can. But I would encourage us to revisit the fact, okay, we did something different. How did it do? And there's, you know, programming does sometimes have a life of its own. It has a start point and it has an end point. And as much as you might wish to have to draw the public in to address us on issues that they have, maybe this is not a the idea or a forum that works. And that would just be, that would fall back on us to find something that would. And if it's an electronic sense, you know, so be it. We live in those times. But I would encourage us to whatever we adopt, and I'm not in disagreement. I like the evenings better than the mornings. Fall tends to get you a little bit better than the spring. But I think that we need to have a sober reassessment here in the near term. In fact, did this change make a difference?
I'm in agreement with
you. Okay, enough direction. Okay.
Next page, under C2C plan, I'll reach out to Kurt to follow up on what he said, but I'm gathering it might be from under the C2C plan tasks where it says update implementation matrix and update C2C plan. What those two items are specifically are follow-up to the first annual review done next fall, last fall, where the board directed me to come back like by March or April with the implementation matrix, make changes to that, and then following that, the C2C plan, and then conduct an annual review as a component of that. So I'll follow up with Kurt and see. But those will be reaching out to Conservation Board, P&D, or Planning and Zoning Commission first, and then bring it onto the board. I do also want you to strike out where it says annual review of C2C plan. Mm-hmm. That will be part of the update of the C2C plan and annual review, and extend that out till June. Then continuing to fund ways to look for and promote home-based Iowa programming. I shared with the board that we do have our first possible candidate, which is very exciting for relocation. I have an official application in, so it's not just a candidate. Brenda Dreyer, Chrissy, and I met this morning, too, on our marketing attack, plan of attack for the program. I think we have a good defined outreach program plan set up, so stay tuned on that.
I would stop us here and say, on a programming basis, that what the success that Leanne just shared with us came from us revisiting a program that you, Wayne, and Paul implemented. And we had a look at we weren't getting too much traction with it, changed it, and now we are. And maybe that's what I was just leaping from the quadrant argument to the home base Iowa, that we need to know that a good idea sometimes ages and not well.
Turn on your microphone.
No. There it is.
And then the next two TBDs under C2C are directly out of the plant, the C2C plan itself, that's communicating on freight train capacities and plans. That was a fall 2017 program that I just entirely drew camp early on with Ames Economic Development. Early on in 2017, let's push it back to late fall. I'm just suggesting if we keep it on, let it be a fall 2018. Mm-hmm. One, so that a lot of the annexation, the discussions that occurred with the Ames annexation can go through finality and then bring this back up. But if we left it on, I would suggest the fall 2018 for it on my work program.
Yeah, let's leave it there and then we'll talk about it if that's not the right time.
And then, again, the Master Transportation Plan RFP, it's in the C2C plan based on the implementation matrix and everything. I left it on for a TBD on the work program. I don't know if you want to just go through the budgeting work sessions, and then when we timely revisit the implementation matrix, it may find a way to be addressed through that as well. And just
I don't know that I'm looking at Darren, and I don't see that we would be anywhere close. And I think Darren's five-year plan from that. But Darren, do you have any thoughts right now about even the concept of one still being viable
in
the next
So my suggestion would be just have it match the updating implementation matrix, at least for now, and we'll come back and revisit it. Then to connect Iowa.
I'd like to go the second item under cornerstone or capstone, the C2C tour of the cities and school boards. And then you've got down, it is 1, 2, 3, 4 from the bottom, okay, conduct annual meetings with city administration, okay? And that, I think that those might be a lower priority. It's something I'm going to bring up when we get down to economic development. So as we go through this work plan and look at if there's anything that I believe we could probably not include in the work plan this year, those might be those two that we could consider not doing or putting on Leanne's work plan. And the reason I picked those two out is that if we're going to tour with the cities or meet with the city administrators about the C2C plan, it just was passed a year ago. So the cities have already been introduced to it within the last year. There were very few changes that we made to it when we did the review, and so is it too early to go ahead and then do a whole new tour, if you will, with, I imagine, Leanne going out and saying what's different, what's changed. And plus the fact, I think, taking time, having Leanne and Chrissy and Jerry and I think a lot of people, almost a committee, taking a look at what do we want to convey out there, you know, and how do we bring it to the people rather than just some words on a piece of paper, but what does this mean to you from a practical aspect? Here's a picture or an example about what this means in practical terms. So that those are my reasons for if... as I go down to economic development and have to add something. Those would be my reasons why I would take those two on.
All right.
Just quickly, on the annual meetings with city administration, that's you three meeting with the city administrator.
Okay, thank you.
And that would just, my end is simply facilitating the meeting.
Thank you for that. All right.
Okay. Then going on down, if I may, Connect Iowa, performing an analysis of local policies and ordinances. This has been done for the county. When I delved a little bit deeper in the Connect Iowa plan, the suggestion was that it be done countywide for all the cities. I definitely want some direction from the board whether or not that is something you want me to take on or not. Again, this is just directly related to broadband and identifying the hurdles, barriers for broadband deployment, and it is a large project. Happy to tackle it if it's added to the work program or if it continues to be added and broadened out, but that might mean putting some other stuff aside. So that's for your discussion.
Good.
And then while you're thinking that, over the next one under that, the technology mentorship program is a new one. I had an opportunity to speak with Connected Nation representatives. They're the parent company of Connect Iowa last week. This is one that we would work with either Scale or BEC. Actually, we have BEC students doing two of them. I'd like to reach out to Scale and have them work on this one. And I think it would be a great program that we could really begin to build some of the Connect Iowa momentum then too. So my involvement on that would not be as great as the one before that. So that I'll hand it over to you to discuss the one before.
So my feeling would be when we put perform analysis of local policies and ordinances, I took that to mean county policies and ordinances, and it made perfect sense to me that you would spearhead that. I get really concerned if we start talking about having one of our staff members spearhead something in our local municipalities. I would suggest that if local priorities and ordinances in terms of connectivity, right, with broadband, if there's something in one of our municipalities that's standing in the way, I would look at Brenda Dreyer and I would say that seems to me to be an economic development issue with a certain if there's a municipality, and I would suggest that dealing with our towns would fall more to the economic development external groups rather than internally. I suggest we take that off your work program. Anybody have an issue with that?
No.
Okay. So we're striking that. All right, we're to Coop Collin. Oh. Love saying good God.
Really, the only one I want to highlight on here is these are all items that were part of the KUCOG that you adopted last week as action steps, one of which I would be directly involved. Just highlight the purchase and locate supply kit at primary ARFs, alternate facilities. That is something I'll work, and I spoke with Lisa, and there is still funding in the budget for this current fiscal year. I'll work with facilities management, IT, as part of that to get those deployed and available. I do want to go down to under economic development. We did begin hashing out a little bit more. Brenda and I did this morning the economic development summit. Have a date that I'm running past the Ames or the Nevada School District because we'd like to have it actually held here in Nevada. But as a part of that too, we'll run a technology showcase that is going to go back to the Connect Iowa action plan. Only comment on that one. Floodplain management program.
But yeah, let's stop on economic development because Supervisor Olson has some things.
We're missing the housing needs assessment and the housing pilot project in here. The housing needs assessment, we were waiting until next month to see what ISA does. All right. Okay. So I just want to make notes. Maybe that's why it's not in here now, but I'm still hopeful that we're going to be able to. We know, I believe, there'll be additional steps we'll need to do anyway. Even if ISA comes up with raw data, there'll be some public input groups, et cetera, that'll be.
And I think it's a fantastic point. I'll just say, at least from my view, this work program are things that we that are solidly in her wheelhouse. It doesn't mean that, well, every year her work program changes kind of as we go through the year and opportunities come up. And so I would view both of those things, Loris, as they could, in fact, be added later depending on what we find out from those. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I just... going to be in there. I'm very consistent about this forward. So, okay.
Well, one of those is going to spin out of our budget conversations.
Correct.
And the other one is going to have some dependency on what IFA does and how all that looks.
Correct. And And during our budget, I'll give you an update from legal about the pilot program.
Okay.
Thank you, Leanne. Okay. Go on.
Floodplain management and the community rating system program. I just do want to point out the second page. Second to the bottom, the CRS recertification, that will basically take me out of commission most of next week and the following to focus on finalizing that. And I'll have it on, I think I have it on your agenda for next Tuesday to do the preliminary work, and then all I need is Rick's signature from there.
And are we expecting to be rated the same?
I sure hope so.
Got a really favorable rating last time, and that saves our land, that saves our property owners dollars in insurance.
I know we cannot go up.
Right.
Unfortunately, but I don't see anything through all the work I've done. I've gone through it twice already. I don't see anything that causes me heartburn that will go down.
Okay.
If anything, I think actually some of the actions we've taken since as I build in will begin to solidify that 7. Yeah. But again, we can't go higher right now.
As a point of order, I would just ask, Jerry, are you taking the test here coming up March this spring?
Again, yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
I admire persistence.
Okay. It goes down in history as the most difficult exam I've ever sat for. It is challenging.
Okay.
Then on the other one is I do want to streamline the floodplain process review application process, so that's the one following. Then going down further under miscellaneous items, kind of the catch-all. Cemetery training, I put TBD. We had RIP, LTD, ABC, 123, come in and do that last year for township trustees. I didn't know if we wanted to do that again this year or if we wanted to do a different spin on it, if we wanted to make that an annual event. So that is a TBD. And then that's it for that miscellaneous. I have one to add, though.
Okay, and if I could, all right. Just a quick typo. Spring, second one, implementation technical assistance program for spring 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Then, under the Collins Maxwell Comprehensive Planning, Roland is interested in exploring your services for comprehensive planning also. So I'll shoot you an email this week about that, put you in contact with the mayor, Andy Webb. And I told him from there, you knew all the process, having to come to us, the board, you know, time. I just said I'm going to turn you over to Leanne, okay, just to let you know about that.
But I won't add it till you guys have.
Right. I understand.
Okay.
I just wanted to give you a heads up.
Okay.
Cemetery, Leanne, you sat in on a meeting last week on prayer remnants and care of our cemeteries. Do you see anything coming out of that that would warrant being included in your work program?
I had to leave the meeting a little bit early to go to meet with someone else looking at Deb because she was able to stay there for the whole thing. I'm going through property transfer books, finalizing that week. That this week to identify ownership of all the cemeteries that have prayer remnants. We did, I know Ethan brought up the cemetery training for trustees. There's benefit. I think I should continue to be involved in those discussions, but a direct output, I think it's more going to be legal and conservation than anything.
Yeah, so Board, what happened is there's one cemetery that Story County Conservation fully maintains, and then there's multiple cemeteries that have prayer remnants on them that Conservation assists informally in maintaining, and then there's a few more that have prayer remnants that Conservation has not had anything to do with, but they're starting the conversation of, is there value? I mean, some of these places are last prayer remnants, like it's the only place you can find a certain plant in Story County. And so that conversation really started last year, but then took off in earnest. Deb, you and Leanne both attended that meeting a week or so ago. What can you tell the board
yes.
about that?
So those cemeteries that Conservation is already providing assistance with in preserving those prairie remnants, Ethan said he would draft some 20E agreements, and so those will be coming forth to the board to consider. There was some brief discussion about the development of a cemetery association. The Iowa Code does allow for that, and what that may look like, but that there was no further conversation on that, but I think that's probably something that would be revisited in the near future just by the number of cemeteries that we have. And we specifically were looking at the Pioneer cemeteries.
Was there any discussion about Conservation taking over care, or was it more providing assistance to the cemetery trustees?
Providing the assistance. And that's what's going to be spelled out in the 28E agreement. We want to be careful about not assuming all those responsibilities, but yet providing the necessary conservation assistance to help with them. There's one cemetery in particular that it's so small, most of it is located within the prairie remnant, and so there's some special care and things that have to be done in particular with that cemetery that Conservation wants to continue its involvement with.
Mm-hmm.
But the 2080 agreement would spell those things out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so do we have enough flexibility as we list cemetery training here, Leanne, to keep flexibility so that you can duck into those meetings and see if the conversation goes in a place that you need to be involved?
Yeah, I'll just make it ongoing.
Okay.
One was a bit ongoing. That's it under miscellaneous. I do want to add one. Unfortunately, Brenda had to leave, but when we were meeting this morning, we started coming up with the idea of doing a recognition program by the Board of Supervisors for leadership, Nevada, and its graduates. It would be honest, a lot of our boards and commission members are graduates of those two programs. Nevada graduates April 12th, Ames May 14th. We're talking afterwards, possibly at McFarland Park, like an early evening. Just an opportunity for like a mix and mingle for the board to meet the graduates and really thank them for their efforts and maybe dive a little bit deeper in that pool of potential applicants too.
Uh-huh.
So I want to run that past you and consider adding that under miscellaneous.
Yeah, so I'd like to see you guys develop that concept a little more and bring it back to us.
Yeah, I'm somewhat concerned that in just favoring those two particular leadership programs, do we leave out other types of leadership programs put on by other groups? But certainly, yes. I think we need to go out and we need to research and determine just who else has leadership. The YWCA, for example, runs a mentorship leadership program every year. That's the first one that comes to my mind. I think there would be a great number of groups who might have their own type of leadership academy. So to see what this would look like and just to list the criteria as graduates of Leadership Aims or Leadership Nevada maybe is not enough. Maybe take a look at what are those leadership programs offer that might be available in other communities, maybe up in Story City or the Ballard business, just sticking with that business theme, let alone what other type of leadership. There's the Citizens Academies for both the Sheriff's Department and the Ames PD. See what Iowa State is doing. So. Okay.
Thank you. Under urban renewal area, for whatever reason, when I converted from publisher to PDF,
it was blank. So receiving applications would be June and July. Reviewing and following administrative steps run June through November. TIF reporting is October through December.
The Iowa State Research Park funding third phase kick off in March and run through July, possibly August, depending on the public hearing schedule. And then annual training session I'd host in February or March, working in February, probably March, after the budgeting session. So my apologies. I printed my copy off this morning, like, well, that doesn't make sense and help you a lot. Then the last one is watershed management planning. I will have some additional tasks likely following the countywide watershed assessments. Those will be finalized and coming to you in the next couple months. Actually, a pretty powerful tool that they're developing. And then if you'd like me to continue to represent Troy County on the Four Mile Creek Watershed Management Authority, I'll actually have to put that on the board's agenda, too. And that is it.
I would like you to continue on Four Mile Creek, and I'll hold it to the board members.
If we need to do a formal motion, I think that's very appropriate.
Yes, so bring that to us. Okay. Anything else for Leanne? We've got Leanne again here in just a second.
Yeah. Once again, just an incredible wide range, and thank you for having it very organized. This is an impressive document, just in keeping track.
It's amazing to review this document and think that this position didn't exist 5 years ago, and some of these items were farmed out other places, and some of them just didn't get done. So thank you, Leanne. Good job. Next is discussion consideration of the COOP-COG exercise. And we've done 7-day review, so we instituted it last week, but sent it out for a 7-day review. Did we hear anything back?
I have not heard anything. Have any of the board members?
I haven't heard anything. No. Did you hear anything?
No.
So we're still dealing with the same facts we had when we approved this a week ago. Any questions, thoughts, or action?
I would move that we approve the Story County COOP-COG training concept, and with those dates as suggested in the plan, and direct Leanne and our projects and Keith, our emergency management director, to go ahead and move forward with trying to implement. Sorry, with implementing, not trying.
Super. Second. Got a motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passes, and we will move ahead on the exercise. Thanks, guys. Next is... Next is discussion consideration of the draft CIP and public review process. So you came and presented this to us early... late last week, early this week?
Last Thursday,
in a budget work session, and now we're doing it as part of a board meeting.
And really, I'm not going to delve into the details of the plan. It's really just to have a conversation by the board to send it out for public comment. Following yesterday or last week's meeting, I did go back and make some modifications, and I'll address those here shortly. Again, just for the public's benefit, the CIP, Community Capital Improvements Plan, runs on a fiscal year basis, so we're looking at the current year, and then on out to fiscal year 23 is year 5. The process we follow each year, we figure out what our process will be. We have departments identify the projects. We go through a process of selecting. If there are some that don't meet the criteria or the thresholds, they don't make it, or they're just normal budgeting, we format and then we bring it forward for adoption. There are a couple definitions and terms that are used throughout assets, projects, and then there are four types of projects, equipment, new project construction, modification of existing projects, and building maintenance. Following the work session last Thursday, the suggestion was made to add all the projects that have been done since we started doing capital improvements planning. And so this was added. It was confined on page 6, a listing, and they're up there as well. Very large number. I do need to make one correction to that list. The first bullet point to Dagan's Lake has an apostrophe, and Dagan's Lake does not need an apostrophe. Also, if you look on page 6 in the lower left-hand corner, there's a green circle with a check mark. The other suggestion was made at the work session to identify for the current year's projects those that are already completed. So you'll see those in the columns as well.
So before you go on, I just want to point out that so this actually came out of CPAT. This is the initial place that talked about putting in a CIP for the county. And prior to this process getting adopted in 2013, so this would be the 2014 budgeting cycle. And so we're on our second budget together now, so I'm sure you guys can have a great appreciation of this. It used to be that all of these expenditures, every bullet point that you see right there, would have stood on its own in a vacuum as part of the budgeting process out of whatever department or office it was coming from, and there was not a great mechanism for the board to ever compare and contrast our priorities in terms of these big-ticket items. And what we've seen from this through the learning process is, at first, it was a difficult. It was very challenging to try to figure out how does something from secondary roads compare to something from the sheriff's office, compare to something from conservation. And what we found, as you can see from all those bullet points, is we're finding that we're getting more done, not less, and we're doing it in a holistic manner rather than a disjointed, one-off kind of manner. And so I want to commend you, Leanne, as all of you do. You run a pretty smooth process to get us to this point.
I do want to give a shout out to Julie Erickson with the auditor's office. She did point out two areas where I did the merge of the columns. I kept the titles. So on page 9, where the draft you have before you, and that was available for the agenda today, West 190th Bridge Replacement is in there twice. And then page 14, because we like the so much state countywide interoperable communication system, it's in there twice. So the draft that I sent out for public review has those corrected. But thank you again to Julie for reaching out. I love having so many sets of eyes that help me, because sometimes, obviously, I miss things when you go through and look at it one person over and over. So the schedule is before you on the slide. I did bring this to the work session last week. Initially, when I presented it to elected officials and department heads last November, we thought we wouldn't start public outreach until the end of this month. I think we're in a really good, solid position to start public outreach today, really, get comments out there. There's a public comment sheet that we'll have available on the internet. Send this out then to the city halls and libraries when we do the annual report mailing later this week. And then bring it back to the board for some discussion and revisions March 6th, and then formal adoption March 13th. Any questions?
I forgot to ask during our
budget workshop, but what you put in for this includes all of these applications and issues, right?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Good. So you're asking for action of the public review process, and what you're asking for is that we get this with the corrections that you noted in the hands of the public today.
Yep. So we're good to kick it off.
Let's do it.
Okay, make
a
motion.
Okay, I move consideration of the capital improvement plan with the aforementioned changes for public review process, bringing it back to the board in March. March 6th.
Yep. Motion in the second. So that is the point where we will have received comments from the public, if any, and we'll know what our budget looks like, and we'll make the final revisions and adopt a final plan for FY19. Okay?
Yes.
Everybody clear? Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks, Leanne. Next is discussion and consideration of employee assistance program after 7-day review. So Alyssa, you brought this to us last week. We adopted it with 7-day review. Did you hear anything back?
Only one. Down under confidentiality, that was a spelling. Instead of participation, it said participate. So I did notice up above in the header, it said initially adopted. It should say 116 of 18 if you approve it today. It says 118 of 18. So that's a typo on my part. So that would be the only change I would need to make. And under reference BOS minutes, I would put in the date of the minutes that once are approved, I can't.
Good. So, if there are any questions, no questions, I take a motion to adopt with the corrections that Alyssa just mentioned.
I would move that we adopt the employee assistance program policy with the corrections noted by Ms. Rizzo.
Second. Motion and second. Discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye.
Thank you, Alyssa.
Thanks, Alyssa. Next, discussion consideration of ISAC's request to participate in statewide and nationwide opioid litigation. So this has been kind of an interesting process about